Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Judah Miller. Now, Judah Miller has worked on a bunch of shows that you know and love. King of the Hill, American Dad, the HBO series Crashing. But his new project is pretty exciting. So it's called Bupkis. It's on Peacock TV. It stars Pete Davidson playing kind of a comic version of Pete Davidson, already a pretty comic figure. But it's about his life and, you know, the vagaries of being a star in the age of social media and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun. It's really interesting. And it's really interestingly structured. I'm excited to talk to him about how the show came together in terms of what they are doing with tone and playing with that sort of stuff. Really excited to have Judah on. Thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I my first question is for you. I want to know what Bulwark Goes to Hollywood means.
I work at a publication called The Bulwark, and we're based in D.C. I actually live in Dallas, but we're based in D.C., so it's like I'm going to Hollywood talk to people.
Okay.
About the business of Hollywood. It's a business of showbiz show. It's very exciting.
Yeah. I love it.
All right. So since it's a business of showbiz show, let me jump right to a business of showbiz question. One of the things I found kind of interesting about Bupkis is that it's premiering on Peacock in a binge style strategy, right? It's coming out all 8 episodes at once, which is different for you. Am I right? Looking at your bio, it looks like a lot of weekly stuff. Did that change how you guys were making the show or writing it and creating it? Or is it just like, well, this is how we're doing it?
Yeah, you know, it didn't influence the way that we made the show. We didn't really know that that's how it was going to get released when we were writing this. But I mean, I'm excited that people are able to do that. Like, I'm enjoying binging shows that are released this way. It's just a little, for me, it feels a little weird because we worked on this so hard for so long. And then the concept that someone might consume this in like a day or two and then move on is a little disheartening. But I'm also just happy for people to enjoy this in any way that they want to enjoy this. And, you know, I think binging something can be really fun too. But that being said, like, we definitely didn't craft this to, you know, lay it out in a way that encouraged people to binge.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. A friend of mine works on or used to work on Community, Chris McKenna, he says hi.
I love Chris McKenna. He's the best.
He talked about when I talked to him on the show, he talked about the way that they used to be able to follow reactions to Community as it was kind of coming out in real time. They'd watch it and they'd be able to kind of not necessarily craft storylines, but see what was working, see what wasn't. It was like a real time Twitter is real time sounding board. I mean, have you used that on your shows in the past? I mean, obviously it's not a thing that really works in animation as much because, you know, everything is done a year ahead of time almost, or on HBO or here. But I mean, I'm curious if that's a thing that you would do as well.
Yeah. I'd like to say that I have, but I don't actually have a memory of like tuning a show towards an audience's appetite. You know, I think that like, from my experience, it's always like, you have like a sense in the room and like who you're creating with of like what interests you the most. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's a pretty good thing to like, to be able to like in real time, like calibrate your show That seems like for Community, that's like, I could see how that maybe like factored in, and like that's part of what made that show so kind of fun and interesting. But yeah. I'm not here to talk about Community. I'm here to talk about Bupkis. No,
absolutely not. Let's talk about Bupkis. So I was trying to describe Bupkis to a friend who's excited to watch the show because he's a big Pete Davidson fan. He's like, how would you describe it? And I was like, well, it's kind of like, it's a little bit like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but a little more surreal than that in places. But not really like that. It's more of a almost a standard sitcom, but not really that either. How would you describe it?
I love that it's hard to describe. Like somebody, the biggest compliment I feel like I got on this was a friend of mine watched the pilot and said that they felt like they'd never seen something like this before. And I was like, man, that's incredible in this world where there's so many amazing shows and so many things have been done, to have anything that feels like remotely fresh in this oversaturated world that we live in feels like a huge accomplishment. But I would describe Bupkis as a absurd fever dream of what it feels like to be in Pete Davidson's orbit. You know, and when we first started mapping out like wanting to develop this show, you know, we realized that there was no concept that we could come up with that would rival the comedy that comes from just being around Pete, because he seems to have like an endlessly absurd and escalating life. And it's like, I don't think that there's any like concept or fictitious situation that we could come up with that would be as fun or ripe for comedy as Pete's actual day-to-day existence.
And that kind of plays into the show. I mean, he's literally Googling himself, driving himself crazy. Is that what he does in real life? Does he sit there and obsess?
Pete actually has like a very like healthy, like he has a flip phone right now. So Pete doesn't like have the ability. He's like off social media. So he's like not, I find it very aspirational. To live in a world where you're not able to look anything up at any time on your phone. But you know, like there is like a huge disconnect between Pete's public persona and the way that people that actually know Pete and are close with Pete and how his friends view him. So that was like a very big theme that we were interested in exploring this first season on Bupkis. And I think it's kind of relatable to a lot of people, because people have these kind of public personas that they portray through technology that's not always exactly the same as their personal lives.
Yeah. I mean, was there any worry while you guys were writing this about playing into some of those preconceptions of Pete and playing them up, or you know, there's a disclaimer at the start of every episode that says this is not, you know, these are based on some real people, but it's fictional and there's dramatic stuff. I assume Ray Romano does.
That's Stacey Keach doing
it's,
that.
It's such, oh, that is, yeah, okay. Yeah, it was, it's yeah, such a great voice. I was trying to,
yeah, it was cool.
place it. Was there any concern there just in terms of, you know, how his perception plays in the real world and amping that up, or,
I mean, you know, Pete is someone that is very fearless in his comedy. I think that's what fans of Pete appreciate about him, is that there's like a unfiltered kind of authenticity to who he is. And you know, he really wanted to write this show fearlessly, and it's always incredible to collaborate and be creative with someone that is that open to explore intimate aspects of their lives, to satirize, you know, thoughts about who he is, even if it's not true. He's just totally fearless to do anything. And I think that sense of anarchy to do anything and allow the show to do and be anything without concern for what people might take away from it is part of what makes this show so special.
You mentioned Stacey Keach, and that's just like, I mean, again, it was a voice I recognized, couldn't quite place, and is perfect. But this show has, I could list 20 names, 20 boldface names, just as, you know, quick guest shots, Ray Romano, Charlie Day, all sorts of people. Of course, Joe Pesci, is in this. Like, the great
Bobby
Joe
Cannavale.
Pesci. Bobby Cannavale.
Edie Falco.
I mean, it's just, it's amazing. How did you guys, how did you wrangle such a good cast?
You know what? It's purely Pete. I mean, like, Pete has, you know, he's a dreamer. He has big expectations about who he would like to cast. And, you know, you say you want to have Joe Pesci come out of retirement to play his grandfather on this Peacock series, and people say it's impossible. And then the next thing you know, we're meeting with Joe Pesci and having serious conversations about having him join our series. I think a lot of it is, you know, some of it is people that Pete knows. Between Pete and Lorne Michaels, there's an extremely big reach that we can go for some very, like, amazing talent. But there's also, I think, people responded to the material. Joe and Pete formed, like, a real type of almost like grandfatherly type of relationship with Pete to mentor him. That was incredible to witness during the production of the show, that even exceeds, like, what you see in the series. I think Pete and Joe actually have a lot in common and really connected. And that's, and I think how we were able to do the impossible and get him to be a part of this show. But it really is a surreal feeling. And it's, like, very humbling, you know, as a writer to, you know, have people like Brad Garrett and Edie Falco and Ray Romano elevate what we're doing and add such nuance to sometimes some really absurd things that we put into the show.
Well, could you highlight an example of something that one of them brought to the show that you weren't expecting, something, you know, that was kind of surprising? I will say, when I was watching, the performance that jumped out at me the most was Ray Romano, just as the I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but
it's like seeing Ray in a way that you've never seen
comedian.
Him. Yeah, it's like it's a different shade of Ray Romano, you know, what you've seen. But it's like, and again, like, it's like, to be, for him to sort of fearlessly trust that we were doing something that wasn't just insane was incredible, you know. But I guess, like, to me, the most surprising contribution to the show is, like, Joe Pesci's take on this character. You know, he is such a tough character, and he's so you know, unwilling to placate Pete in any way, and challenging of Pete in a way that was, I think, harder than we necessarily initially envisioned it, but it provided so much to the show. And he is such a sense of love and support and mentorship of Pete that comes through despite being so critical of Pete. But I mean, like, you know, someone like Joe Pesci is he's such an iconic performer, and he challenges the scripts and challenges us as much as his character is challenging Pete. So it's like, he really had a huge impact on the show creatively.
Yeah. I mean, you really get that sense of grandfatherly disappointment at times, which is, I mean, Joe Pesci, great actor. You can't.
One of the best amazing actors. Yeah. It's like, you just want to, like, you want to do right by him as you do with all these actors, but, like, you know, and he's inspecting and looking into every inch of every line, you know, and finding the continuity of character there. And it's, and then when you layer in that our show takes absurdist turns that bends things, it's very complicated, you know, where your lines are, but it's like, but we were able to find that, I think, with him. But man, like, the level of depth and emotional poignancy that we're getting from people like Edie Falco and Joe Pesci and Brad Garrett is just incredible.
Yeah.
Bobby Cannavale. I mean, like, it's insane.
Yeah. Cannavale is great in this and everything. I mean, again, the cast here is just stacked. I want to highlight one actor who maybe some folks aren't, but Simon Rex, Simon Rex's episode Florida diamond dealer / party goer / whatever.
He'd be a self-described hot boy, hot boy style is how he would say it. But
But he's fantastic. I mean,
he's such a good actor. Yeah. I mean, like, he's like, again, like one of those, he's someone that Pete knows. And so we were able to get him to come in and like, yeah, I mean, like, it's like you watch, you know, Red Rocket and you're like, man, this guy's an amazing actor. And to have him come in and play such a heightened, like absurd persona and bring such a kind of odd level of nuance to something that's so kind of big too, it's just amazing. It was like, it, each of our episodes has its own kind of distinct vibe, and like, you know, it's like what Simon Rex brings to that episode is like unlike any of our other episodes in a way. So it's like, we like that the show continually keeps kind of shifting in tone, and that's, I think that's one of the benefits of getting someone like Simon Rex to come in and play a character like that.
Yeah, I think that's, is that the fourth episode of the
that's the
show?
Fourth episode.
Fourth,
yeah,
episode. I will say, for me personally, that's where the whole show kind of clicks, because it is, it's very different in vibe, it's very different in style, and it's like, okay, I see what they're doing here. They're going for something a little different each time out, and it works. Let me talk about writing then. So, you know, how did you guys write this show? Did you sit down with Pete and you were like, well, what do you want to tell? What story do you want to tell? Or did you sit down and map out like how we get from point A to point B at the end of the season?
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a little bit of both, but it's like all the episodes would originate from Pete, you know, talking about different aspects of Pete's life that we were interested in exploring, and then looking at like the way that those separate kind of standalone episodes fit within a larger arc for his character over the course of a season. But in a way, we kind of embraced a very erratic nature of storytelling, because it's like, we didn't want it to be overly mapped out or beautifully designed. Like, I think that like the idea that we're like, the idea that no one might expect that our second episode is going to take the turn that it takes off of the pilot was something that we embraced. But it was really that, like, I don't even know if you've seen that episode or not, but like, it informed it gave so much context to Pete in his adult life and the dynamic that he has with his mom and his grandfather. It seemed to like, we view that very much as an origin story for his character. So it like, it felt important to us that happened at the early part of the season. And then, yeah, I think that like, once you get into the latter part of the season, there's like an incredible thrust into our finale. But it's like every show, like you break episodes that, you know, sometimes you'll break an episode with the arc, the overall season arc in mind. And sometimes you just have an idea for an episode that plays to a character, and then you just find where it fits within that arc.
Yeah. Yeah. So for the record, I've watched all the episodes now. I binged them because I'm at home with COVID locked in my bedroom.
Oh man.
It was very easy. It was very, that's just good. To get through them all. So I watched it as I think a lot of people probably will, which is kind of all at once. And I think it's good for the show too, because I do think, like I said, it once you kind of realize what's happening and get into the rhythm of it, it works better as a
the variety of episodes.
Yeah,
like, sort of get with the flow of choppy waters of those. Yeah.
Choppy waters makes it sound bad. It's not.
No, I know. It's not choppy waters. It's smooth sailing. It's the smooth sailing of the show.
You know, you hit the peaks and swells. I don't know. I'm not a boater.
No, I honestly it's been very gratifying to talk to people that have seen the show and like have people respond so effusively to the shifting tone. Cause it's one of those things where you go like, I don't know if people are like, if people like something to be of one tone, but like, this is so erratic and constantly shifting, but it's nice to see that people get it and still appreciate it, even though it is always changing.
So the show is very concerned with Pete's personal life, of course, this fictionalized version of his personal life, but also I assume a fictionalized version of his professional life as well. And yeah. There's a great episode where he goes up to Canada, just setting the stage here for listeners. He goes up to Canada to shoot some footage for a Brad Pitt movie. And I won't spoil it, but it is one of the weirder aspects of modern filmmaking, where he is on a soundstage with a director on an iPad, kind of telling him what to do remotely, and an AD, and it just is such a weird way to think about the filming of a film.
Yeah.
For people. I mean, I'm curious if you've gotten any response from people who don't understand that this is how a lot of these movies are made now.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm proud of that episode, because I feel like it captures the isolation. And Pete is sort of like, almost like, in some parts, like, he gets treated almost like a object. Like, it's like that sort of floating between different spaces. And, you know, I think that, like, there's a glamorous idea of what it might be like to be in a movie, but then there's the reality of what it actually is like, you know, for Pete to go to Canada during the holidays and be isolated like that. It's, you know, it's very different than what the outside perspective might be. And I think it plays into that major theme that we are exploring the whole season, which is the disparity between the public image and persona of who Pete Davidson and what his life is like, and the reality of what it is.
There's a great musical cue in that episode as well, from Requiem for a Dream. I'm just curious if there was any like trouble getting the rights to that, or was that just we're using this?
You know, it's funny, because I think that the one that you might have seen a cut that had some
track.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, that Requiem music is like unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. It's an amazing score.
Never mind then. The one big cameo that I wasn't going to spoil, but then I saw it in the trailer, so I guess I can. Is Art the Clown? How is Pete Davidson a big Terrifier fan?
Big Terrifier fan, and he introduced me to the Terrifier franchise. And I describe the show as a absurd fever dream of what it's like to be in Pete's life. And like, there's nothing more fever dream like than going to work and having Art the Clown be there and we're standing by a trailer and having a conversation with Art the Clown in full makeup. But it's like, yeah, it was so much of the casting and so many elements of this show are a collection of Pete's like favorite actors. They were involved in some of his favorite projects. It's like a collection of just all of his favorite things. And so I think to like have Art the Clown be a part of this show and this world is like the part of the fever dream of Pete Davidson. But yeah, I mean, that was Pete's a big fan, and he reached out, and next thing you know, we got Art the Clown scaring everyone on set.
I'm just glad that Pete Davidson is in the Terrifier universe now, officially in the Terrifier cinematic universe.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I always like to close these episodes, these shows, by asking if there's anything I should have asked, if you think there's anything people should know about the show, about the making of the show, what's going on in the business of Hollywood right now, anything at all.
Man, I just am so excited for people to come and see the show and hopefully be surprised by the show doing and being things that maybe they might not expect it to be. We're just all so proud of like what we've made and the hard work we've put into it. And we're excited for people to binge it in a day or two and then move on in their lives.
Well, do you think, what are the hopes for season number two? I mean, I assume you guys hope for a second season here, or maybe not. Is this a one and done? What do you think?
Oh, I mean, I definitely hope for a season two, because we just have so much fun making this together. But like right now, we've been so focused on season one that we're just really excited for people to see season one and hopefully enjoy it enough that we get to make more.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Judah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.